Have you ever been lost? Now, to be sure, there are lots of ways that you could be lost. I see someone giggling in the back, a couple. So yes, they've been lost before. You can imagine the conversation. Perhaps you took a wrong turn, or you didn't notice a highway exit. And before you know it, you've lost your bearings and you need to figure out just exactly where you are so that you can get back to where you're supposed to be. Now, with today's technology, this is much simpler than perhaps it once was. Now, when we miss a highway exit, our phones or GPS devices simply calculate a new route for us. But in years gone past, missing a highway exit could be stressful as you try to determine what you did wrong and try to figure out exactly where you are so you can calculate that new route. But perhaps you've been lost in another sense. You've been separated from a group that you were a part of. You looked down for a second, and when you look back up, the people you are traveling with are nowhere to be found. Of course, the scariest version of this occurs with parents and children. I don't think there is a more terrifying moment than when, as a parent, you realize that you have lost track of one of your children. Your heart skips a beat and you try to remain calm, but panic is threatening to overwhelm you. I think all of those who are parents and grandparents as well aren't immune from that, and we've all perhaps experienced that at one point or another. And of course, when children are separated from their parents, they feel that same level of anxiety and powerlessness. And so how reassuring it is when we are found. When we reach our destination, or when we're reunited with loved ones. And our passage today holds that reassurance of being found by Jesus Christ. It's a long passage which Katie read to us this morning, but it tells a story about a boy or a young man who has been blind from birth. And if you were paying attention, you notice that Jesus is noticeably absent from the bulk of the passage this morning. We read all of chapter 9, 41 verses, and Jesus is only there for 13 of them. He's not there in this passage very much, yet his actions are central to understanding it. And I think the most reassuring aspect of the passage this morning is when Jesus does re-enter the picture, where we read the words, "Jesus heard that they had driven him out, and when he found him." When this young man was found by Jesus, it tells us that Jesus went looking for him, which tells us that he was important to Jesus, just as each of us is important to Jesus. Before we dig deeper into our passage, I want to take some time to clarify some points and some parts of the passage so that we can understand better what John is trying to share with us. And the first thing is that question that the disciples posed to Jesus. They ask him in the beginning there, "Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And in the next passage, we hear the words, "He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him." And those words add theological meaning to the text. They tell us about God and how God operates in the world. They imply that God made the boy blind so that God could do something wonderful. They instill an implication that there is a connection between sin and sickness. The problem is that the words "he was born blind" are not in the original Greek. They've been added by editors of the translations, both the Good News, the New Revised Standard Version, to help us make sense of the passage. However, in doing so, they add meaning which may not have been the original intent. Another thing we might want to consider is who John was writing his gospel account for. John's gospel was the last gospel which was written. And while we would consider ourselves a part of that audience as we read John's gospel today, we were not the first audience that he wrote it for. John was writing to a Jewish community that was following the teachings of Jesus, and as a result, was forced out of the synagogue. And we can see a very strong parallel then between John's original community that he was writing for and our passage and what occurs with this man who was born blind. And a popular interpretation of this story is that the blind man is not a real historical character, but a literary construction reflecting the situation where John's community was forcefully separated from the synagogue. While there's no way to definitively prove that, what we are left with is a story which deals with community. More specifically, a community which fails this young man who was born blind. And the community doesn't just fail him once. They repeatedly fail him. Now, in order to understand how this young man is let down by the community, we need to consider the healing which Jesus performs. Jesus, on the Sabbath, makes some mud out of spit and dirt, and he rubs it on the man's eyes. He then commands the man to go to a pool of Siloam, which means sent. And it is the same pool of water where earlier in John's gospel, Jesus declares, "I am the living water." And so in many ways, Jesus is sending the young man to go and find Jesus. And we should read this part of the story as a baptism, as water plays a significant part of the story. Not only is the man healed, but as we continue through the story, we realize that he can now see that Jesus is the light of the world, just as Jesus himself says, "I am the light of the world." Now the man is not only healed of his physical blindness, but now he sees a greater truth which Jesus has revealed to him, that Jesus is the light of the world, that Jesus must be of God to have performed such a miracle. Yet after explaining what happened to him to the people who used to see him begging in the market, well, those same people who used to throw him coins, they don't believe him. They don't believe that this is the same man who was formerly blind. They don't celebrate his recovery. Instead, they question him. The man was already an outsider for being born blind. But now that he is healed, he is doubly shunned, and the community fails him again. And so they bring him to the Pharisees, who are looking for an excuse to invalidate Jesus. And they ask the man to testify to what has happened. And again, he shares his story. "Jesus came up to me, he put some mud on my eyes, he asked me to go to wash, I went and I did that." But they don't believe that the man was ever blind in the first place. They doubt his testimony. And they fail him. And so they call his parents. His parents can get to tell us the truth of this. And his parents reply, yes, this is our son. And yes, he was born blind. But we don't know why it is that he can see. Ask him yourself. We want nothing to do with this. He is of age. So the community failed him. And now his family fails him. They don't stick around because they're afraid of being associated with Jesus and of getting kicked out of the temple community. They've already been ostracized by the community because they had a son who was born blind. And they don't want to face any further damages themselves. And so they fail their son. So the Pharisees ask the man again for his testimony. And the man replies, "You didn't listen to me the first time. Why should I tell you again?" And the discussion gets very theological with Moses and God being referenced. And finally, the man says, "Here is an astonishing thing. You do not know where Jesus comes from, yet he opened my eyes." We know that God does not listen to sinners, but he does listen to the one who worships him and obeys him. The man confesses his faith in Jesus. And for this confession, the Pharisees drive him out of the community. He is no longer welcome in the synagogue. And so he's been failed again by the community, by his family, and now the religious community has also failed him and pushed him away. And so when Jesus hears this, Jesus goes and finds him. Everyone fails this man who was born blind. The only people in this story that we can trust are this man who was born blind, who testifies to the truth of what happened to him, and Jesus. And we might ask ourselves, what does this passage reveal about the communities we live in? How welcoming are we to those who are different than us? How welcoming are we to people with disabilities? How tolerant are our families? Or is it okay to say that Uncle Frank has always been that way? He's just old and from a different time. How inclusive are we as a community of faith? Do we extend the love and grace of God to all those that we meet? Or are we more concerned with our own well-being? The blind man operates as a foil to the Pharisees, who are blinded by their own arrogance and sense of self-righteousness. As a result, they can't see the harm that they are causing to the man, nor can they see the truth which is before them in the person of Jesus Christ. And we realize that as we read this passage, we move very quickly from talking about physical blindness to spiritual blindness. I wonder, have you ever turned in the direction of the sun and being overwhelmed by the brightness? You squint and you shield your eyes. It's the natural thing to do to protect our sight. But not here. Not in this instance. Here, we need to open our eyes and we need to see the light of the world that is in our midst. We are journeying towards the events of Good Friday and Easter. And after that first Easter morning, the resurrected Jesus was walking, and he met some disciples, and they didn't recognize him. Only when he broke bread with them later did they realize who had been with them all along. The blind man in our passage today, the ignorance of the Pharisees, reminds us that sometimes we can't see what is right in front of us. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found. Was blind, but now I see. Thanks be to God.